Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If I'm talking normally.
No. Blimey, that was loud.
Am I talking now?
Yes.
Okay. Welcome to Ambridge on the Couch, an in-depth look at the Archers with me, Jeff Thomas, Lucy V. Freeman, and Matt Rodriguez Payne. Now, before we make a start on your emails, let's have a recap on what happened this week in Ambridge.
Actually, I think it's the last 2 weeks because of
Christmas. Are we talking about a two? Blimey, this could be a long show.
I know, but not a lot happened, so it's fine. We began the Christmas fiesta every bit as badly as I foresaw. We would, namely with appalling jokes, courtesy of David, which then led on to the dancing Von Krapps. David and Pip ganged up on Stella and basically refused to let her out of Brookfield until she'd agreed to prance about in a leather dirndl. Stella's only riders were chocolate biscuits and going on first, which clashed with Linda's riders, which were going on first and a copy of Stanislavski in the dressing room. I am refusing to talk about gagriculture, as everything in me clamped down so tightly I may need bowel surgery. Alice broke it to Chris about Harry, who is disturbingly creepy, but Chris out-creeped everyone by announcing that he would like Martha to have a puppet one day, which he managed to invest with a great deal of sinister intent. He went out to buy a puppet and came back with a Shetland pony, which, if it is anything like the Shetlands I have known, will eat everything in the village, including people's wellies, bite people when it doesn't get its own way, and kick like a mule when it's asked to go anywhere at any speed. In fact, they're like toddlers. So Chris has, in effect, given a toddler a hairy toddler. Anyway, the hairy toddler is called Champion the Wonder Horse, which meant I sang that for the rest of the day. Maybe she can get a bear called Gentle Ben next. Christmas at the stables seemed to consist of people talking about bicycles and meat, which is better than the usual Christmas chat of, oh, do you do your turkey like that? How strange. Do not find it makes it dry, but maybe you like it like that. There was a Brookfield Christmas catastrophe, which I think we actually predicted, the merging of the two Christmases. Stella and Jill were extremely mature and did not end Christmas by forcing dry lemon drizzle down each other's throats till one of them choked, which is disappointing, but nicer for the family, I suppose. Denise took 45 minutes to make gravy, which seemed unnecessarily protracted unless she was doing some sort of Heston Blumenthal job and serving it in an inner tube surrounded by dry ice. She'd clearly become so bored she couldn't wait to go and help Alistair unwind a sock from a dog's lower intestine. Ooh, Christmassy. Anyway, Denise and Paul are now working together at the stables, and Alistair and Denise are getting closer and closer, to the extent that when Denise said that her and John were having issues, Alistair could barely contain his whoop of joy. A tree smashed into Emma's car, and Ed took that precise moment to tell her that he wanted to be a tree surgeon, largely because he seemed to have developed a bit of a crush on a soldier. It didn't seem awfully tactful. I wonder if she'd been hurled across the kitchen by some dodgy wiring, would he have announced his intention of doing an NVQ in electrical engineering? Anyway, Emma liked the idea so much, she had one quick go on a chainsaw and promptly decided to retrain as a tree surgeon, which is the equivalent of someone having 3 pints, doing unexpectedly well at pool and deciding to hand in their notice and become a professional school snooker player. However, it was very nice to hear them sounding cheerful and with something to look forward to, so I shall reserve judgment until Ed accidentally has someone's leg off. Kenton, Jolene and Lillian were sat in an empty pub saying, Emma's car's being hit by a tree, to each other over and over and over again, like early Harold Pinter, until Lillian confessed to being extremely miserable, which she attributed to splitting up with Justin, but which I think was probably more to do with having to spend Christmas with Mango. Christmas with small children can be nice if they are your small children, but otherwise the whole day is a dizzying blur of wrapping paper batteries and overpriced bits of plastic. Annoyingly, Lillian and Justin made up, which has scuppered everyone's hopes that Tiger was going to make a reappearance, and we can blame Tracy for that, who only forced them to reconcile in an effort to stop Lillian telling her to smile more like some lechy old bloke at a bus stop. So, I predict a sexy couple of weeks coming up, with Lillian and Justin being nauseating and probably a proposal, Alistair and Denise spaying cats with a seething sexual tension like Ross and Rachel in rubber gloves, and Ed and Emma being all kissy now they've not only got a purpose, but no bloody idea where they're going to get 40 grand from. Bring it on, I say. The weather's rubbish and there's nothing on the TV, so let's see in the new year with a bit of Ambridge sexy time instead.
No. Can we please? There's already been far too much sexy time.
Just this
week. Yes. Well, yeah, no, because Ed was so turned on by the idea of Emma's car getting crushed by a tree that he came over all randy at the thought of her in her pajamas.
I don't think it was the tree that gave him the horn.
Lillian and I may have got things out of order there slightly. Lillian and Justin were tonguing each other in the bar of the bull, for God's sake.
While everybody watched, which was also a little bit disconcerting.
That was very, very odd. That sort of thing needs to be reserved for internet sites, I think. I suppose Alistair and...
He said, I could have kissed you and I would have kissed you back. Yes.
I would have. And she said, I would have kissed you back. Yes. Indeed, yes.
Why would you kiss me back? Kiss me front. That's what I... But yes, it's nice all that. And it's nice and soppy, but it is going to get wearing very quickly. And everyone's already saying, oh, will you just get on with it on Twitter? So, yeah.
No, that was... there's slow burn and then there's whatever the hell that was for Alistair. And I'm not quite sure now what it is that's holding them back exactly.
Well, because...
Professionalism?
No, they're still married.
Yeah.
Denise and Thing are still married.
Yeah, okay, but I mean, clearly in name
not
only.
Not for much longer.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're still married enough for John to come to the stables and all that.
And, yeah, right, he was there for Christmas, actually.
So if
he?
They were properly split up, then that wouldn't happen, would it?
No, that's true. That's true.
And he is a man of honour, little Alistair, isn't he? He's so sweet.
If nothing else, yes, indeed, yeah.
No, he's a poppet, I think.
Well, we shall see in the next week or two whether he is really a man of honour, because I suspect he's going to get tested.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes.
What, you think she's going to start turning up in her vetty, in scrubs with nothing underneath them?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, or a sheepskin liberty bodice.
That is hardly hygienic in a veterinary surgeon, is it? You get bits stuck to it. Bits of animal. God.
Yes.
Imagine.
You mentioned something right at the end there, which has reminded me of, I don't know, it seemed to me to be some dodgy maths. Because, you said 40 grand.
Yeah, because he said it was...
17 for the kit.
Yeah.
But 20 if they got kit for both of them. And I'm
I didn't hear that bit. I didn't register that bit.
He said, well, we can't share kit, so you'd have to get your own. So that would be 20. And I thought, what is the only kit you can't share a pair of gloves then? Because, you know.
Well, they can share. It's just the safety they can share chainsaws. The couple that shares chainsaws stays together.
Yes, yes.
They can share chainsaws. They can share all the safety equipment. They just can't share the clothing, can they? The safety clothing.
Well, I don't know.
What is must be 3 grand then?
I mean, if Emma
only
were to wear safety
to
pajamas, if Emma were to wear safety pajamas, she'd never have them on anyway. If Ed had anything to do with
it. I doubt she spends a lot of time in her clothes anyway.
Safety.
Ed is forever hauling them off her. She's like, get out the way, Ed. I'm trying to see the telly.
Have they changed the actor for Ed, by the way? Is it...
No.
He sounds different.
No. Tis still him.
Okay.
How does he sound different?
I don't know. He does sound broadly the same, but he's become... He's a cross between Ed and Tony now. He's got more than a whiff of Frank Spencer about him.
I think it's when you don't hear someone for a while and then you come back and you think, ooh, maybe, they don't, because you've remembered them in your head as different to how they sound or something.
Yes, but you, by the way, I entirely disagree with your, what did you say? So Ed had got a good feeling, hadn't he?
Yes.
I've got a good feeling about this. And I thought, yes. Well, in that case, I definitely haven't.
That means it's going to go wrong in a second.
So I'm relatively confident then that this is all going to.
Yeah.
But it probably was not even start. My guess is they won't get a loan.
But I mean, my God, how quickly did that all happen?
Yeah, I mean, it's his lifelong ambition for the last three
and a half minutes. Yeah, and since he met a soldier up a tree. And then, you know, she's like, yeah, I like doing that as well. Let's do that for the rest of our lives and hand it on to our children. And I'm like, you've done it for literally, you've wafted a chainsaw about for about two
minutes. Yes, you've chopped up one tree that was horizontal anyway.
Yes, that is not enough. Switch. But then, you know, if the alternative certainly is always smelling of dishwashers or whatever.
Exactly. So actually, I did kind of think, well, yeah, why not?
Yeah.
I mean, there's the money issue. You know, if they get a grant and...
I mean, there are loads of grants and things for rural, not crafts, but rural, what do you call them? Skills. So there are grants available for stuff like that. You know, I know they've found one, but they should hunt around and find some more, because I bet there are some more they could get.
And perhaps I don't know, because tree surgeoning, I don't know how much of that is, that tends to be like people's gardens and things, doesn't it?
Yep.
And ideally what they would like, what they need is something that will get them out deep into the woods. I think you know what I'm saying.
Yes. Well, I
did. If they're going to work together, then they might as well really take advantage of that.
My God, they're just never going to get anything done, are they? The second she hears the throb of that chainsaw, she's going to be up against a log pile and that
pajamas off in a jiffy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But do you think that's partly why, you know? Because the way they adopted the idea so very rapidly.
Yes, I think it was probably just hormones talking, to be honest.
Do you think next week they'll go, oh, Ed, that was mad. What were we thinking? I don't know. I was never meant to never talk about
it again. But it was a fun week, though, wasn't it?
It was brilliant, that, Emma.
We didn't chop down any trees, but it was great fun.
Put your helmet on again, Emma, just for me.
Put your safety slippers on. Oh. Yeah.
Oh God.
To move on from the kissers and kissies, we're a bit cross about Lillian, aren't we? I think.
Well, I didn't want her to get back with him.
No, neither did I.
Because
he is an arse.
I kept thinking she can do better, but then she was so horrible to
Tracy. Have I missed something here?
Emma,
does Lillian have a stake in the bull?
Yes.
Right.
She's a part owner.
Because I was really thinking, this is very odd indeed. Yeah. I don't understand.
Peggy Woolley used to run it, and the bull was her and Jennifer's childhood home.
Okay.
And she's now, she owns a share of it.
Right. That makes more sense now.
It did seem thinking, a little blimey, odd. Because
you were thinking, blimey, she's... Yes, right. A punter is telling them how they ought to be doing their jobs. Get pretty short shrift from me in that situation.
Yes.
But okay, if she owns a share. I didn't understand why Jolene wasn't just telling her to
sling her
keep up. Keep it to herself. Exactly. Yeah.
No, so they have to be they have to count out to Lillian a little.
Right. So who are the owners then? Lillian and Kenton and Jolene also.
I believe so, yeah.
And anybody else?
Nope, don't think so.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And is that a third each?
I don't know.
Have you read the contract at all, Lucy?
I haven't.
I'm starting to think you haven't.
Do you think their honesty is a contract? Or do you think it was just a chat? And then she probably handed over like £750 million. And they said, thank you very much. And that was that.
Yes. She sold a quick yacht.
Yeah.
And
do you reckon this money for Ed and Emma is going to come from Uncle Oliver?
Well, I was thinking about this. It's in the scheme of things, you know, especially Oliver's. I mean, Oliver is generally talking in hundreds of thousands, isn't he? Right. And 20 grand to get them up and running. And
yeah.
You know, particularly as a loan rather than a gift. Because I'm not sure the bank, I mean, what are they going to secure it on? You can't.
They don't own their home.
Well, right. You can't. I'm not sure you can secure a loan on a caravan.
Yeah.
You know. So I think it might have to. But I mean, Oliver's strapped, isn't he?
Yep. Down to
so
his
it won't
last.
Be, won't be him.
Pair of hunting purdies. Purdies. You can't have those, can you?
What I really hope, really hope is not going to happen is that they will just all fall apart and they'll go back to...
Yeah.
Because it's like in the panto last week, that little... I think you and Harriet thought I was joking when I said it was making me a bit emotional. But Emma singing the, you know, this time...
Yeah.
Did. I thought that was really... And it's kind of... it made me think about her and how slightly shit her life has been. In some ways.
Well, Harriet, no, it's been fine.
No. God, Harriet's life's brilliant. No, Emma's life, of course. And I'd really, really, really like to see her and Ed get on.
Yeah. And it's about time. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What tends to happen is in the sort of the cycle, the Archer's cycle, it's Clary and Eddie would always reach rock bottom. And then something would happen, and then Eddie would say, and they'd be sort of rescued for about 6 months, and Eddie would say, or a year maybe, and Eddie would say, I really feel like we've turned a corner, Clary. Yeah. And then they'd be, but then they'd go quiet for a bit.
Yeah.
But then
yeah.
they only get hauled out again when things have gone to shit. So, yeah. You know, it's not.
I mean, it is a recurring theme in the Archers that the Horribins and the Grundys and
never get an even break. Yeah,
right. You know, exactly. Yeah. It's only a matter of time until it all goes wrong for them again.
Yeah, yeah.
It would be. I mean, actually, even from a story point of view, if you took Emma and Ed and they start this business and it's an enormous success and they've suddenly got money in their pockets. There's all sorts you could do with that from a story point of view and sort of character development and. So, so I think what I'm saying is, come on, scriptwriters.
Come on, BBC.
Give it a go. let's see what happens if somebody who's poor does all right for themselves.
Yes, but then they have because that's what Susan and Neil did, and everybody rips the piss out of Susan for being
aspirational. They've got their own place. They've got their own place. Mm-hmm. But,
they built their own house.
Okay, but he's a pig farmer and she works in the shop and the cheese factory.
He's a manager. Don't let her hear you say he's a pig farmer. He's a manager. Where is a
okay,
suit?
All right. Nonetheless, you know.
Yeah.
I wouldn't... Then they're not in the same league as Justin. Or,
no, of course not.
Or
no,
Oliver
no,
or,
no.
you know.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's a bridge too far. That's
I agree.
That's
they have done.
Of...
They have done nicely for themselves, but... And they're at the... And also, they're at the stage of their lives where people tend to have managed to put something together. You know, you've eventually managed to pay your mortgage off if you've got a house and a mortgage and so on. Mm. Whereas Ed and Emma are still young enough to make stupid decisions with lots of money.
Yes.
So let's have some of that.
Yes, like let's be tree surgeons.
Yes, and timeshares and you know all that kind of fantastic. You don't hear about timeshares anymore, do you? Let's bring timeshares back.
Oh, God. People realised what was happening, didn't they? we had some very sad news over Christmas, which was the death of Ian Pepperell.
Yeah, oh, yeah, indeed. That really was sad.
Much too young. He was very, very young indeed. And he died after a long illness. And you were saying that you had only been listening for Roy being sort of mildly irritating, but rather sweet and
yeah, irritating
quite nice.
Is putting it a little strongly. But he was in the first episode I ever listened to. It was after it was when Kirsty was discovering Slavegate,
right?
And she was leaning on him quite heavily at that point.
Kirsty and Roy's friendships were one of the nicest aspects of Roy's, because the character did have a really big, because he was known as Roy the Racist for ages.
Well, exactly. I missed all of, I am aware of all of that. Yeah, but I completely missed it. So my sort of impression of Roy is almost entirely positive.
In the sort of 80s. And 90s, 80s and 90s, maybe 90s. He was very kind of angry young English man. And he sort of
really
reflected.
I really find that hard to imagine.
I know, And he sort of reflected a lot of what was going on in the press and things like that. And, the sort of the mood of the country and or some aspects of the country. Yeah. And he was absolutely vital. Well, obviously, he posted dog poo through his just letterbox and things like that. Although he was being led astray by other people, but at the same time, he got in with a bad crowd. Yeah, and it took him a long time to kind of find himself, I think. But he emerged as a very, and he had really, as a very sort of sympathetic character. And he also had really good comic timing. So they ended up, whoever would have thought Roy would have ended up with lots of the funny scenes, because he really wasn't like that when we first sort of got to know him.
No, right.
And, the stuff with the spread, because he was a big fan of spreadsheets, as you are. And so when he started doing his online dating, he had a spreadsheet of who all the dates were, so he didn't get them muddled up. Because when he was on Tinder or whatever.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, man after my own heart. There.
Yeah.
I mean, the not the dating on Tinder, obviously.
No.
I don't want to make that clear.
But so he went on a big transition, and it was really nice. And he ended up being a very popular character, I think. And his relationship with Kate was astonishing. And then his
I'm still not sure I entirely believe that happened, to be honest.
It was a true fact, and we have Phoebe to prove it. But I don't know what they're going to do, if they're going to let Roy get another job and leave, or what will happen.
Well, we were talking about this the other day, and we're starting to it's really sad, but starting to build up a sort of backlog of decisions, that need to be made.
Yeah.
Although I was going to say, particularly with the cast restrictions, but did they loosen those for Christmas?
Because we seem to have Uncle Tom Cobbley and all, didn't
everybody,
we?
Yeah, right. Yeah. The last couple of episodes have been well staffed, should I say.
I don't know. Maybe they found. Oh, we have. Look, we found another box out the back.
found a box of cast vouchers in a drawer. That was.
Or maybe for the whole of 2024. Now it'll just be, Kirsty and Helen, no one else, because they've used it all up. Can you imagine? Love Kate and Brian living together.
It's going to be catastrophic.
But wasn't it sweet though when she was talking about it?
Yes, it was.
It was really nice.
I you know that I don't have any time for Kate whatsoever.
Except for this week when you did.
Except for this week. Mm. I thought she was fantastic. Showing clear signs of self-awareness.
Yeah.
Not being quite happy to have her leg pulled and to pull back.
Yeah.
Really showing sort of love and care and thoughtfulness.
Yeah.
For her dad.
Yeah.
I really, really, really enjoyed Kate this week.
I think one of Kate's ways of handling with stress is to become incredibly irritating. Because it only seems to be when she's stressed that she does that.
I don't know if it's stress. I think if she's not got anything else to think.
Yeah.
If she's got nothing else on her plate. Mm,
yeah.
She just gets to think about herself all the time.
Yeah.
And then she can just be incredibly selfish and irritating.
Yeah.
But if she's actually got somebody else to think about, then she does.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really like the fact that she knows that Harry's a wrong'un.
Yes, me too, definitely. Mm. And I, you know, I'm not a great one for the woo. But if she wants to call it an aura or whatever, yeah, that's fine. We all know what she's talking about.
Yeah, and we all have it with Harry as well, I think.
Yes,
definitely. I mean, Chris said to his mum, I loved it when she said, "What's he call himself then?" And he said, "Harry Chilcott." She went, "Harry Chilcott." He'd made up his own name just to piss her off.
But then, and then Brian said exactly the opposite.
Yeah.
Oh, well, Harry, that's good.
A solid name. Yeah, solid name. Yes.
Which I think...
Cricket said, and yes, exactly. Yes, prep school, yes, yeah, and yeah, marvellous. Yeah. And then did you hear what Kate said when she said, you mean class appropriate? Yeah, and I thought, that's very good.
Yes. That was a fantastic conversation. The whole thing was great.
Yes.
And Emma being, Alice being slightly panicky, but actually, because Alice of a year ago or 18 months ago would have just had a complete meltdown about that.
Yeah.
But actually, yes, she got a little bit stressed, but she was all right about it. And it was a really, really nice little scene that made me smile.
Yes.
Even if there was a complete wrong in standing on the doorstep.
Yeah.
Perhaps they're playing with us though. Perhaps Harry Chilcott is actually a jolly good egg, and that whole thing with Chris and
not normal. That's not a normal thing.
I almost went for his explanation.
Really? You think
sort
he's all right?
Sort of. No, I don't. No. But I'm not.
You think it's misdirection? We're looking in the wrong...
Maybe. Deliberate misdirection.
Okay.
On the part of the script writers, and he's actually going to turn out to be all right.
I don't know. And also the way he was so rapidly accepting of the alcoholism without giving it a second thought made me think you're not actually focused on this. You're just in this for... something else. It's not. He's doing a lot of love bombing, and he's doing a lot of everything's brilliant. You're brilliant. Everything's brilliant. I love you. This is fantastic. This is brilliant. Everything's brilliant. And that's sort of nice, but then part of you thinks, no, you're not actually paying attention here, are you?
Don't know about that. I've been in relationships in the past, and I know you have as well, where not necessarily alcoholism, but where fairly early on in things, people have had fairly serious things to discuss. And you do kind of go, oh, God, that's fine.
Yeah.
Oh, that's completely fine. You know, of course, I wouldn't dream of walking out of this restaurant right now, you know.
Even though, exactly.
It's
going, oh, God, I wish I could just walk out of this.
Your entire brain is going, get out.
Yeah.
But you do, I mean, you can't go, oh, well, I didn't realise you were an alcoholic. Sorry, I'm going to have to go home and have a think about that.
Yeah.
You know. You do go home and have a think about it, but you at the time you go, oh, God.
At the time you lie, obviously.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's all he's done.
I don't know. And that gagriculture thing, I can't even.
No.
Did we have to go through these months of psyche just to enable Jasper Carrot flagging stand up career?
Because by all accounts, he wrote that himself. And I mean, I'm not surprised. You listen to any comedian who was big in the 80s and 90s, you listen to any of them now, and they are behind the times. They're just not very funny anymore. Unless, I suppose, you know, you're their age.
Yeah.
So it's not a surprise at all. What is the surprise is that they let him do it.
Yeah. I don't know what the rationale... I mean, that was instead of a Christmas show, wasn't it?
Oh, was it?
Well, there was no pantomime this year. There was no...
Oh, yeah, right. No, that
there was
the
no
exact,
nothing.
There
was no Blythe Spirit. There was no,
was
no nothing. Yeah. So I think that was it. And really, I'd have been happier listening to Dorister Gravy. What's she called?
Although, I think actually the real star of the show, although he didn't realise it, was Jakob.
Yes. Yes.
Who I enjoyed enormously. Yes. Just being himself.
And also the living embodiment of social anxiety.
Oh, Christ, yeah.
It's just lovely.
No, it's just a bag of ticks and nerves and worry. And
desperately, desperately wishing he wasn't there.
Yeah.
Which is the rest of us. We were all Jakob.
Wishing out loud that he wasn't there at one point, even, I
think. I can't do this. I want
I'm
to
sorry,
go home.
I'm going home.
Yeah, yes. And we should have bloody talked him out of it. Should have left him.
Yeah. She was fantastic with him as well.
Yeah.
Saying, don't worry, you absolutely can do this. Yes. You can do this far better than anybody else.
You've got the she put it back in his terms. Yeah. You've got the IT, you've got the information. Yeah. No one can do it without you because you've got the information. Then he's like, information, okay. Then it was something solid he could hang on to. It was like, right, then, okay.
So as I think many of the listeners know, I live in the Netherlands. And Dutch people, it was a bit of a shock when I first got there, although I'd been in Germany before I moved to the Netherlands, so I was warmed up there. But the Dutch are nothing if not honest.
Right.
To a fault.
Yes.
And I do mean to a fault. If something is coming out of a Dutch person's mouth, you can be sure it's what they actually think.
Yeah.
And they are not, in stark contrast to the Brits as a general rule, they are not sugarcoating it. They're not saying it because they think it's what you want to hear. They're not, giving you any leeway at all. It's what they think. Mm. And actually, once you figure that out and come to accept that it's not personal, they're not being
rude.
Don't
take offense at it,
exactly. Yeah. They're not being unpleasant. It's actually great. You know, it makes life much easier in many ways. And Jakob was just doing that, and it was.
But he's Swedish, not Dutch.
No, but nonetheless, I think you know his
Northern European.
I wasn't suggesting that that was a national trait. I think with him, it is purely a personal thing.
Yeah,
and he is probably slightly atypical.
But my favourite line was when Emma was looking at the photo of the pony, and she said, "Oh, look at him! He looks like a little man."
Yeah.
And he went. No, he's not a man, Emma.
No, he's a pony. It's a pony. It's got a leg at each corner and a mane and a tail.
Yeah. Is it four coffees?
I haven't really got him up until now, and I haven't really enjoyed him, but that was fantastic.
This week was written by Katie Himes, and I think she is rapidly becoming one of my favourite writers. Archer's
the
writers.
Last 2 weeks have been great fun.
We had a Warburton week and then a Katie Himes week.
Great fun. I've really, really, really enjoyed the last 2 weeks.
Yep.
In stark contrast, it appears, to people who go on the Facebook group of a certain Archer's society, let me put it like that, who all appear to utterly, utterly hate everything about all of it.
And I can't wait to stop listening. And then come on next week to tell everyone how much they can't wait to stop listening because it's so awful.
I have had a whale of a time in the last 2 weeks. It has been brilliant and lovely and funny and heartwarming and thoroughly enjoyable.
Yes.
So, Yabu sucks to all of the haters. Hashtag haters.
Now we have to go back in time to remember what the hell me and Harriet were talking about last, because we had the pantomime in between, didn't we?
I expect you were having an inadvisable stab at something. So Lucy and I have come up with a new segment for the show, which is called Lucy and Harriet Have an Ill-Advised Stab At.
We will come to that shortly.
Am I jumping the gun?
You are, yes.
Okay.
Christine says, the person or people who should be most grumpy about Christmas in Ambridge are Alan and Usha. This is because the church is dedicated to St. Stephen, which means while most vicars are having a nice rest on Boxing Day, Alan should be having a service for the Feast of St. Stephen.
Yes.
Probably to the smallest congregation of the year, she says.
Oh, that made me laugh, by the way. The idea that Gagriculture was in some way going to persuade people to come back to church.
Yes.
Never in a million years.
Well, you say, okay, I'll come back to church, but promise me you will never do that again.
Well, yes. Okay, yes, possibly. Yes,
it's more like, unless you come to church, we'll keep doing this.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah.
We're just going to keep Sykesy doing this all the time until you all come back.
Every time you see him, he'll just be in the shop doing it, or, you know, in the post office or on the green. Yeah. Oh, Michael Gorman, we were talking about babies and when people say about adopted children looking like you.
Yes.
And like me. Alan and they all look like you. Because Alan and Ian Adam and Ian were having a sort of a bit of a meltdown at the school show.
Yes.
You remember that bit, yeah?
Yes.
So
I do listen when
Michael Gorman, the doorman, has said the incomparable P.G. Wodehouse said incontrovertibly that all babies look like a cross between Winston Churchill and a boiled egg. So she/he looks just like you. It's a ceremonial greeting not intended to be taken literally unless one parent looks like Winston Churchill and the other a boiled egg. That's very true. He also, Nancy Mitford said, all babies look like howling oranges in black wigs, which also made me laugh. And also, Michael says, in my opinion, the ceremonial she/he looks like you is an affirmation of the collective societal evolutionary imperative to reinforce a maternal paternal instinct to rear their offspring safely and in health so that they can procreate and thus ensure the continuation of the species. She/he looks just like you equals you have a duty towards this child.
This is the abandoning a lamb, isn't it?
Yes.
Which we're all making sure doesn't happen in case we have to look after the lamb.
Yes, exactly. And it's tribal, isn't it? It's confirming you are one of us. It is one of ours. You are entrusted with this. Do you understand that? Rob Williams said that he has had stepchildren who people have claimed look like me. He says, I remember reading something years ago in The New Scientist about not genetically linked children looking like the non-familial parent.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's due to the child copying the facial expressions of the parent, which causes the underlying muscles to develop in a particular way. These are the same muscles that they reconstruct faces from when they find skulls.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there we go.
He said, I just thought you'd like to know that you don't get everything wrong. Which now, Jeff listened to... Jeff listened to the email where we were talking about, first of all, about pensions, and then we segued neatly onto Russian...
Patronymic names.
And Jeff messaged me and said, what are you doing? This is a bin fire. Which was... helpful. But yes, we got it completely wrong.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And he said, you'll have emails. And within a second.
No, there were already emails by the time that I said there were going to be emails.
Terry White has emailed us and said, Niet. The Russian system of patronymics uses, oh my God, it's all, I can't read it. Putin is Vladimir Vladimirovich. Vladimir, son of Vladimir.
Vladimirovich, yes.
Vladimirovich. Yes. Turgenev was Ivan Sergeyevich. Ivan, son of Sergei. Tchaikovsky was Pyotr Ilyich, Peter, son of Ilya. And the first female cosmonaut was Valentina Vladimirovna Tereshkova, which is Valentina, daughter of Vladimir. Ski in Ukrainian is not a patronymic. It's a formative adjective. It denotes affiliation with a place occupation, not with a father.
Exactly.
He said, I look forward to someone of Eastern European heritage contradicting me.
No, that's also my understanding.
Okay.
So,
yes.
I think that's how it works.
So that
interesting,
was...
interesting, though, that they that it is male-dominated. So even the... So the somebody might well contradict me on this, but so the example that Terry gave of a
female
patronym. Mm. So that
well, that's why it's called a patronym.
The clue's in the name, right? Yes. Patronym. Mm. Was still her father's name and not her mother's.
Mm.
But whether in the meantime they also take the mother's name as a matronymic, or what would you call it? I don't know. Because they do that in Iceland. No, maybe not. No, maybe not. Because
Are you doing it now? Now you're doing Jeff has a bit of an ill-advised stab, aren't you?
I might be, yes. Mm. So, for instance, I think Björk is something like Gudmund's daughter.
Yes.
So that daughter is quite clearly...
Yeah, daughter.
Even to, right, exactly. Mm. English speakers is clearly... But I don't know whether Gudmund is a male or a female name. I can imagine that in Iceland they might be a little more equal
less,
about
yes.
it.
Yes.
So as any Icelandic listeners, please... let us know.
Yes. So we are now going to stop talking about pensions and Russian naming systems.
Yes, I think it's for the best.
We'll wait and see what our next ill-advised stab might be at. Possibly astronomy, for example. I can imagine us making a marvellous job of that. Smashing. Yes. Right. Who else have we got? Oh, yes. Michael Gorman said, why the hell was David saying... smash cracking pair of pins, he said 1924 called and wants its phrase back. That was a strange... I quite liked that though. When David inadvertently sounded like he fancied Stella and then sort of gently taking the piss out of him.
I saw in places online people getting extremely upset about this and saying it was disgusting and creepy and so on, and I...
What?
I think we do have to be more sensitive than we were 40 years ago, you know. But I really thought it was...
But it was... The joke was on David.
It was very much so, exactly.
Suddenly getting himself into a... Saying something without thinking, and then the water's closing over his head, and him thinking, oh my God. And instead of them rescuing him, they just let him flounder about, which is exactly what you should do.
I don't, No, I mean, I don't believe for a second that David was, you know, was trying it on with...
No, no.
With his daughter's lesbian partner, you know. It was fantastic. And I cracking set of pins, I mean, that, yes, so... I can absolutely imagine that was knocking about in the 20s, but I think also more recently than that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure I'd say it.
No,
now.
Please don't.
But even about your pins?
Yeah, no, definitely not about mine or anybody's. Just
okay. But I mean, if I were, you know, in different circumstances, I think I'd probably come up, I'd say something rather more up to date than that.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's, you know, it wasn't really ancient.
No, okay. But anyway.
He's just showing his age a bit, wasn't
Yes,
he?
And just being a bit awkward and a bit Davidish.
Yes.
But yeah, I like the fact they didn't rescue him, they just let him flap about.
Yeah.
Steve Parrott said, oh, you remember last week, the week before last, when James Everett put in Jazza singing? And Linda and Robert talking about the pantomime.
Yes.
And Harriet and I promptly burst into tears. so did Steve Parrott, who said, perhaps camp straight men have a lot in common with menopausal women. How can I be camp and a rugby rufty tufty?
Yes, he's a big rufty tufty rugger bugger, isn't he?
But he says, but I am.
Yes.
Yes.
There is nothing wrong with a really good blub.
No.
I do it. Possibly not daily, but it's certainly, there's never a week goes by without me having a good old blub about something.
Yes.
It's brilliant. You feel so much better after a good blub.
Yes.
And I encourage all men to have a jolly good blub about something now and again.
Mm. I also said that I was slightly concerned about Paul being, you know, he's gay, so therefore he has to be, you know, Tracy Twinkle with let's remember everybody's birthdays and everybody, let's have a party, let's, you know, what, tangoing past with her.
Yeah. Oh, it's always the issue with stereotypes, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
stereotypes
yeah.
are stereotypes yeah. for a reason,
yeah.
but,
yeah.
you know.
Laurie Dudley.
Oh, hello, Laurie.
Yes. Says, but he says as an early, well, yeah, okay. He says, here goes me speaking on behalf of the entire gay community. I have no problem with Paul being a camp, fun-loving boy. Is he a stereotype? Maybe. Have yes, I encountered yeah. that stereotype many, many times? Yes. Would yes. I be annoyed if he were the only gay in the village? Yes. But Adam and Ian are polar opposites, and Pip right. and Stella are different again.
Yes.
As is Bi Rory. Ian and Adam might well be intense, but I think they're an honest representation of the angst you would feel about your child if that's how you conceived them. But I don't think you need to worry about it. I think everyone who goes through that process would be ready for the awkward comments. Any dad being told that his kid looks like him would, I suspect, be thrilled. Essentially, I'm putting my head above the parapet as an early 30s gay Archers listener and saying they're not doing too badly.
I am very glad he sees it that way, because I also see it that way. And
no.
I think there's room for all of that. Yep.
Yeah.
Very good points. Very well made.
We also, Harriet was convinced that the continuity person had mentioned a storyline, excuse me, that never actually appeared in the show, as if the continuity person had was told that something was going to be happening in the show yeah. that we never yeah. heard. And Lisa in Canada says, we, across the pond, have annoying repetitive ads pre-podcast, and the announcer only says, you're listening to Wednesday's da-da-da episode of The Archers. And then the music starts. So our Cadbury's chocolate is hideous compared to yours. Our weather is torturous. Any funny British TV show isn't available on our BBC BritBox Acorn. And our architecture is non-existent. But in addition, we don't get the continuity guy.
No, I don't either. So, but presumably, if you're listening to it live on iPlayer Live, then you'd get the continuity guy, right?
Yeah.
But if you're listening back on sounds, then you don't get it either, do
no,
you?
No,
no. No. So I think that's all it is, probably, is okay. that is listening to it on sounds. You don't. I don't get it either in the Netherlands.
Yes.
But I think if I listen to it live... then
no, but she says that her person says, listen to the episode of Barchers BBC Radio 4, but they don't say sounds.
Ooh, I can't remember now. I definitely get you're listening to Wednesday's edition of The Archers. I definitely get that in the Netherlands. Do you not get that here?
What do we get? You're listening. It depends whether you listen to the podcast or you're listening to it on... Yeah, because you can listen to it as a podcast, as a standalone podcast.
Exactly, that's on sounds, yeah. So then that's you're listening to Wednesday's edition of The Archers.
She also can't remember the names of Chase's children, Brad and, Chelsea. Thank you. I am loath to add to the heap of grumbles about these budget cuts, but this is not at all the same Archers experience as it was when I started listening 3 years ago.
No, that is, I'm in exactly the same boat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She said, what has happened with Jazza, the manager, and will we ever find out? Well, he's not going to be the manager, because we have found out, because Hannah's got the job. So
yeah, we haven't revisited the storyline.
No.
He hasn't
no.
gone back to Jazza saying, you know, what the hell?
And what is Rory doing for work, or does he not need to work, or once again, have I missed something relevant? See what happens when we have no continuity guy. He's still a student.
Yeah, he's still studying. I guess he went away, 2 years ago? A year ago? He's probably in his second year now?
Yeah. Third. And she says her plot prediction is Joy's daughter, Rochelle, is estranged from her due to a serious struggle, addiction, serious mental health challenges, and is currently living without a home. Perhaps this is partially why Joy is so well-tuned to mental health struggles and yet seems so uncomfortable when talking about her daughter, despite being rather chatty about everything else.
That whole Rochelle thing is definitely one they've got in the wood, isn't
yeah.
it? They're
yeah.
saving that for a rainy day.
Yep.
There's definitely the potential for storylines there. Mm. But I do... Yes, the she'll just occasionally drop something into the conversation, which I think is what we're talking about here, to suggest that there has been difficulty, hardship, struggle. Mm. Yeah. Particularly, I think, with mental health,
yeah.
possibly. So, yes. I hope we find out, and I hope she's all right. She seems okay, doesn't she?
Joy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm.
She's not letting it stop her.
I worry about her a bit. Oh, Joy.
Christine has also written about Paul and said, I suspect his family is a bit dysfunctional. And as an only child, he's always been a little bit Little Miss Twinkletoes slipping into a tap dance routine to paper over the cracks. It will all come out at Christmas. Yeah, I agree about that. He's always been the sort of pushes and makes people laugh through uncomfortable situations. And I imagine that there have been a few.
Well, there was sort of the first inklings of that, possibly, when he and his mother were sort of, bickering, for want
yeah.
of a better word.
Yeah.
In fact, I did. They might even have called it bickering.
Yeah.
And they both sort of laughed it off and said, "Oh, don't worry, it's all going to be completely fine."
Yeah.
And I thought, is it though?
Mm.
Simply because, you know, why would you put that in if
yeah.
if it weren't going to be? But, you know.
Ellen Hughes, she said, after I said, as in me, Lucy said, that our listeners are always writing in and correcting us. And she said, as Lucy didn't seem too cross about that fact, I feel empowered to be a nitpicker. Because I'd said that I was convinced that I'd heard the auctioneer say that the land purchaser was a woman. So she went back, you know, the person that's bought the land, the Grundy land.
Yeah, yeah.
So being a stickler for small, probably unimportant details, I went back to re-listen to the auction episode. During the discussion between Oliver Eddy and the auctioneer, they just referred to the land being bought on behalf of a third party. The gender was not specified.
Okay.
If I missed a further reference to the buyer in a later episode where we found out more, I beg your most gracious pardon and will eat nothing but kale croissant for a week to make it up.
I know which one my money's on.
Yes.
There. So
me being wrong.
Keep your kale croissants in the fridge where they belong.
In the bin where they belong.
Yes, yes.
This is from Basil, who says, Stella is right.
I really enjoy a Basil email.
Yep. Stella is right and Pip is wrong. Yes, Stella's remark about the dryness of the cake was rather unfortunate, but there's no reason why she shouldn't have challenged Jill's cosy decades-old certainties.
100%.
To do so does not imply that Phil was a greedy, uncaring, inept farmer. It merely highlights the fact that in a rapidly changing world, agriculture must keep up. Phil knew this and often challenged his father's assumptions and prejudices, just as David did to him a generation later. Now it's the turn of the likes of Stella and Pip. Stella was quite right when she told Pip that kowtowing to Jill and her beliefs is patronising, not respectful. He also said, you know, we were talking about Ryan Kelly's beautiful singing voice.
Yes.
He said, when Ryan and I were but little boys, long before either of our voices broke, his singing voice was highly thought of, so much so that in almost every school play and concert, he sang solos.
I can quite believe that.
He says, this means that when most people are wowed by jazz singing, I become nostalgic.
Oh.
And he also says, please give a festive shout out to my dear friends, Debbie and Jay, without whom I should never have come across your fabulous podcast. Hello, Debbie and Jay.
Hello, Debbie and Jay. Merry Christmas to all three of you. Yes, and Happy New Year. But so that whole thing with Stella and Jill, I didn't think it was possible to love Stella more, but here we are.
Mm.
She was absolutely 100% right. And Pip was, understandably, really nervous about it and worried about it. But she really needs to. She needs to figure out which side her bread is buttered. There, I won't go into too many details. But my former father-in-law, and I have had quite a difficult relationship. I love my mother-in-law very, very much indeed. My father-in-law, not so much. And it's largely because I never tolerated his bullshit in the way that the people who live with him have done. And that was easy for me because I wasn't part of the family and I didn't have to see him more than, you know, twice or three times a year. And even when I did, I didn't care what he thought of me. I really don't give two shits what that man thinks of me. And so it was, you know, it was relatively easy for me to stand up for my mother-in-law, for whom I have enormous respect and love and so on.
Well, that's the key word, isn't it? Respect.
Yes.
It's, if you don't respect someone, then their opinion of you, it matters not a jot, because
exactly.
Why would it?
I don't know how I would have done it any differently, to be honest with you. And particularly that, so the whole Stella thing, it was especially ridiculous because it was entirely precipitated by Jill. Stella would never have said a dicky bird about the cake, if Jill hadn't said, actually, I think it's a bit dry. Yeah. And all Stella said, I think, was something along the lines of, oh, maybe a little bit, but it's still delicious, you know. And that was then World War III. Well, sod off. No, not having that, I'm afraid.
I think there's something about... there's a particular generation of older people who believe that age deserves respect regardless of behaviour.
Yeah. It is worthy of its, you know, it is per se to be respected.
You have to be respected simply because you've lived a long time and you haven't died yet, rather than I'm a thoughtful person or a nice person or whatever. You've just got to because I'm older than you. Yeah. And it's, I think that's an incredibly old-fashioned attitude that a lot of younger people that don't get, but because Pip's been brought up in that sort of thing, she sees that, and Stella just doesn't. Stella just doesn't acknowledge, and says, no, she's not, put, just because she's old, she's not, doesn't mean that she's perfect and infallible, you know.
And Stella doesn't need Jill.
No.
And she doesn't need to be liked by Jill or anything else. It's quite easy to get into that situation and feel these things by proxy. But actually, it's incredibly liberating. To realize, I don't care. What this person thinks of me. It's not important. It doesn't have an impact on my life. Sometimes you do have to take other people's lives into account. If I do this, it's going to make life difficult for other people. But by and large, I'm all for, you know, not caring about things you don't have to care about.
Patricia Johnson, I know we have all been watching for clues of relationship between Alistair and Denise. This was a sweet and gentle nudge in the right direction. I'm glad they're both being mindful that Denise is married. She still has time to bring her relationship to a firm end before getting any closer with Alistair. And also, she says, read Justine and Lillian. Does Lillian not remember that he previously forgave her for dallying with Matt Crawford in the run-up to their wedding? Now, that was a breakdown of trust of the highest calibre. Cutthroat business tactics is much lower down the line, in my opinion. Right, Pat McClellan's plot predictions. I have a theory about Harry the Hip. Well done. That's the new name, Pat. Well done. The inventor no one's heard of. Definitely a wrong'un and probably a prescription painkiller addict. I think Alice will dump him because he's so needy, but he's obsessed with her and won't take no for an answer, and will get stalkery, setting a plot in motion for Alice and Chris to get together again. And then she says,
that
would work.
Hangs together quite nicely, doesn't it?
Prediction two, Jimus. We've been getting pointers to his forgetfulness for several months. He will start to despair, thinking he has dementia, but will eventually be diagnosed with a nutritional deficiency. A good slug of vitamin B12 and he'll be good as new. Yes, that's good.
You don't get a lot of scurvy in soap operas.
And especially not in the rural districts, when there's always a cabbage when you need one. Yeah. So, yes.
Hang on, cabbage, vitamin C?
Yes. It's got everything. Cabbage has got everything in it. It's very, very good for your cabbage.
You can, no, hang on. If you could ward off scurvy, with, so we're having an inadvisable stab.
I was going to say we're having an inadvisable stab here, aren't we?
If you could ward off scurvy with cabbages, then they'd just have taken cabbages on boats, wouldn't they?
Yes. Mm. You'd think all the vitamin D they were getting on the tropical voyages would stop them getting anything, wouldn't you?
Well, no, because, I mean, these...
Because we're all supposed to take vitamin D for absolutely bloody everything now.
Well, I do take vitamin D, but... No, I mean, these diseases are vitamin specific. So vitamin C is scurvy, and vitamin something else is beriberi, and vitamin something else is rickets. And so you can't get rid of your scurvy with cabbages.
Thank you, Dr.
Or vitamin D. You can take all the vitamin D tablets you like, and it's not going to help you.
If you're tired of getting your medical advice from Instagram, then tune in to Dr. Jeff. You can't, I'm pretty sure you can't get rid of that with cabbages. Well done, Mass.
I feel like I'm on relatively firm ground here.
Well, yes.
Vis-a-vis cabbages.
Harriet and I always think we're on relatively firm ground until we just take that one step too far when we suddenly realise we've plummeted off the edge of something and actually we haven't
got a clue.
You're
in free fall.
It's when she says to me, oh, yes, I see. And then I think, oh, God, no. Yes. I've told her something that's completely wrong. Bugger. Right. Now, we have this.
What the L is happening? What the L is happening here?
Ooh, was that you in stereo then? That's strange.
No, Fabrice just happened to be walking past. So I got him to say it.
Okay. So I think we all know, well, we know exactly what's happening here. And if you have been affected by the death of a relative plummeting off the edge of a stately home while fixing a flagpole, maybe swerve this bit. But anyway.
And also, if you don't know what happened to...
Nigel Pargeter,
then spoiler alert. Yeah. Because you're about to find out.
You're about to be shaken to the core.
So,
do you know about the shaken to the core thing?
Do I know about the shaken to the core thing? I don't know. Do I?
It was leaked. It was a BBC memo, a BBC email that was put out about the arch, about what was going to happen. And it said, something is going to happen that will shake Ambridge to the core.
Oh.
And it somehow got leaked. It was all over the press. It was all over Twitter. So it was hashtag SATTC, Shake Ambridge to the Core. And everybody was trying to guess what it was going to be. And then we couldn't believe it when it was Nigel going off the roof.
Hang on a minute. What? How long ago was this? 10 years?
12 years, something like that.
So people were already talking about the arches on Twitter 12 years ago?
Yeah. That's how I first got into Twitter, from the Archers.
I see.
Mm. Anyway.
Well, they weren't more specific than something big is going to happen.
No, it was just something that was going to shake Ambridge to the core.
Right, okay.
So people that didn't listen to the Archers said, oh, what, someone gets a new tractor. And people that did listen, we all knew it was going to be some sort of death or, you know.
Yeah.
No. Anyway, here it is for those of you that want to relive Nigel's moments.
It's really not a what the L is happening here this week, is it? Because we all know what's happening.
I remember that was happening here, yes.
But I within seconds of this clip starting, I knew exactly what was happening. But I hadn't heard it before. So it was very interesting and actually not a little shocking. So if you haven't heard it before, strap yourself in.
I hadn't realised we'd be this high up. Roofs do tend to be on top of things. Oh, your gutters need cleaning out, if you don't mind me saying so.
Careful, it's frosty.
Yeah.
It's so much easier in the light.
Whoops!
Are you all right?
No, I'm fine, it's all right. Oh, I see what you mean.
Maybe Lizzie was right. Perhaps this isn't such a good idea after all.
I'll be more careful. We're up here now. We may as well finish the job.
You stay there, then. By the end of the banner, I'll do the other end.
Are you sure? I don't mind...
No, it's much more sensible if I do it. I've been clambering over these roofs since I was a child.
Really? I'm surprised Julia let you.
She didn't. It was mine and Daddy's little secret.
What, he came with you?
Of course. Showed me all the foothills. Secret parted a knowledge, passed down from father to son.
I see.
Mummy was furious when she found out. But he told her it was a family tradition.
Oh, and I just learned how to milk. Oh. Right, have you got it?
Yes! Oh. Only Kenton seems to have tied it on with one of his sailor knots.
Oh.
You unhook your end, ready to let it drop.
Okay.
Dear Daddy, we had so much fun together.
Right, I've got it, Nigel.
I wonder if Freddie and Lily are too young to come out here.
Well, I think Elizabeth might have something to say about that.
I imagine she would. Oh, that's done it.
Good.
She's rather like Mummy in some ways. I've been very lucky to have two such fantastic women in my life.
Yeah, well, I don't want to hurry you, but one of those fantastic women was right. The wind's coming up.
It's free now.
Good.
Oh, blast!
What's the matter?
Stupid thing's got itself tangled up. I just need to get a bit higher. Well,
careful, Nigel.
I'm all right. I've got it now. I'll just... Oh, heavens!
Nigel!
David!
Nigel, hang on!
Ah!
Nigel! Ah!
So either that was from The Archers or from Bertie Wooster Takes a Tumble. He's incredibly... I had no idea how posh he
Very
was.
Very posh. And he really egged it up in that bit. It was all...
Yeah,
well,
I got the feeling. Yes, Mummy and Daddy.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, it's... And as I think was discussed at the time and you mentioned earlier today... it was a very, very long fall from the.
What does the relative
from what was only the roof of a house.
I know people said, what was he doing, jumping off the Eiffel Tower or something? yes, anyway, so bye-bye, Nigel. An iconic New Year's Eve event for you, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, that was New Year's Eve, was it?
Mm, yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
It was. I've heard so much about it that it was. It was. That's quite shocking to hear it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. But it was, well, especially because we were all waiting to be shaken to the core. Mm. And then he said, let's go up on the roof. And we're like, no. But there's an urban myth that David said to Nigel.
Right.
What are you, a man or a mouse? Because Nigel is supposed to have said, oh, I'm a bit, yeah. I don't think this is a very good idea or something. But that didn't happen, did it?
No, not at all.
There was no...
In fact, David was, just urging caution.
But then in hindsight, when Nigel says, do you think Freddie and Lily are too young to come up here? Mm. You go, for the love of God, yes, they are. Do not, my God.
In fact, they're still too young, even today, to do that.
Yes.
But I'm interested to know that actually it was all Kenton's fault.
How was it Kenton's fault?
With his pesky sailor's knots.
Was it? Because
had he managed to get the knot undone more quickly before the wind?
Why was Kenton tying knots in?
I don't know. That was what he said.
Oh.
Something about Kenton's tied it with one of his sailor's knots.
Oh, good. That's another thing we could dislike Kenton for, then.
So that was definitely Kenton's fault.
Excellent.
In fact, I'm surprised he wasn't arrested and charged with seamanship. Yeah.
That's quite interesting because Elizabeth gave David such a hard time for sort of, in inverted commas, allowing it to happen.
Mm.
You'd think that she would have had more of a pop at Kenton, really, wouldn't you?
Well, if she's listened to this, and I can only assume in the meantime that she's had a chance to hear it, you know, she must know what's happened now.
Yeah. Well, there we go. Right. So last week's one, the time before last week, the week before last, it came from Linda's Christmas Round the World cabaret show, when Jim surprised Linda by performing his Latin poem in English with Latin subtitles, and Jazza changed his rather crude song to what we heard.
Yes.
Which was very lovely.
It was very lovely.
Yes. Right. So I think we're done, Mr. T.
Well, is there not a sketch?
Oh, yeah, but you haven't said that in script.
Do I need to yes. read?
Yes.
I also need to unlock my screen, which is locked in the meantime. You can feel free to read that bit if you get there before me.
And now we're crossing over to Ambridge on the Couch headquarters, where we or they...
You've muffed that a bit.
I know. It all got
all right, I've got my screen. I'll do it. I'll do it.
All right. Okay. Yeah.
Hang on. Just need to put my glasses on.
Oh, for God's sake.
I can't read it without them. Oh, that's better. And now we're crossing over to Ambridge on the Couch. Jeff Thomas, Ambridge on the Couch, PLC. Yeah. No. No, I've told you. No. I'm sorry. We're very happy with Matt. Yeah, I get it. I do. But please don't be emotional. There's nothing I can do. Try Fee and Jane. They might be looking for someone. Yeah. Bye. 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 Bye.
Who was it?
Elton John again. I'm going to have to block him. I know he needs the exposure, but I'm not risking upsetting Matt. It's too much. Which reminds me, did you remember the Chateau Petrouche to James Everett?
The weekly case? Yep, that's gone. The Fortnum & Mason stuff is being sent directly to his Italian villa. I don't know what a student does with all that truffle pasta. Spag bol, maybe. Anyway, as long as he's happy. Have we heard from Harriet?
Yes, she says she'll be back for next week, but she's not happy with the sketch.
What's wrong this time?
Well, there's a joke in it about Damon Albarn, and she says she doesn't know who he is. I said you'd change it to Sam Ryder, and she said she didn't know who that was either.
But he only won Eurovision 2 years ago.
I know, but she's so very, very young. Guys, can you keep it down?
Is that the studio engineers? They're very rowdy today.
Oh, just looking forward to their New Year's Eve night out, I expect. I'm glad we treated them. I mean, getting a table for 30 wasn't easy, but Gordon Ramsay said he'd squeeze them in for a mensch on next week's show.
Well, they deserve it. I mean, making a show sound slick and professional is easy. Making it sound clumsy and amateurish, that is where the magic lies. Did you notice the mad echo they put on my voice the other week? Genius.
I know. I still love the adverts being put in mid-word. Not even sentence. Literally in the middle of a syllable. We probably need to give the casting team a raise, by the way. How they continually find those stage school kids to play Harriet's children is amazing. They all sound the same. And the guy that plays Rufus is brilliant. What's his name?
Joaquin something? Joaquin Phoenix. I think we've done so well keeping her under wraps. It helps that she's in LA, doesn't it? Much less likely to bump into people. She doesn't use the penthouse when we do Zooms. She just sits in her swimming pool changing room and tells everyone it's her studio in the loo. Is she still seeing Bradley Cooper, do we know?
Apparently, yeah. It's much easier for her as she's not actually in London, I think. Talking of that, I'm not sure how much longer I can keep this accountant shtick going for. Someone's going to recognise me from the National soon, especially as I'm up for an Olivier. Well, three, actually. I mean, I can ask my agent to use old photos, but it's not going to work forever.
Uh-oh, it's Kerry Davis again asking if he can give up the Archers and write for us. I've told him we'll think about it. He says he's happy to intern for now, but we've got Russell T. Davis until the end of the year, and there's only so much tea we can drink.
Sometimes I wish I was an accountant. Nights in, reading John le Carré and testing the internal temperature of meat. Instead of these constant premieres and networking. Me, Matt, James Everett and Jazza are doing Cannes this year. You going?
Nope. Cooper's got tickets to Burning Man, so I'm going with him to stop any excesses.
You know, there's going to come a point when people start to catch on that Cooper's a married studio producer with two children, don't you?
I know. We'll tell them that when we tell them I'm a bloke. I'm not worrying about it yet.
Okay. Anything else we need to think about? I reckon we can stay stable for next year, to be honest. With Harriet only being 24, we can get a few more years out of her. I do think, though, that it might be time for us to put it about that I'm dipping my toe into singing, acting, dancing, modelling, though. Tell them I'm contemplating a move out of accountancy.
good idea. You can't risk anyone recognising you when you do your Vegas residency. Other than that, I can't see why we can't carry on as we are, really. Cheers.
Happy New Year. HQ, where we're having a review of the year.
So, if you have enjoyed the show, oh yes, thank you to us. Well done, us. If you've enjoyed the show, please give us a review on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you like. And you can find us on Facebook, on Twitter at @onambridge. Febreze is at @fabulousfebreze. Harriet is at @shambridge. Or you can email us at ambridgeonthecouch@gmail.com.
That's ambridgeonthecouch@gmail.com.
Now, we've got a suitably Christmassy type song to go out with.
Oh, I don't think I've heard this. I
no,
don't
you
know
haven't.
What this is.
No.
But, oh, how excite.
You know, Stop the Cavalry?
Yes. Jonah Louie, whatever his name was.
Well, he's called his, Matt's called his Stop the Comedy because he was so.
And we stopped that ages ago, Matt. About three quarters of an hour ago.
He means gag thingy.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh. Gagriculture. Oh. Never has a festival been more aptly named. On account of the nausea.
Yes. So, we will go out with that. Have a fabulous Happy New Year, everybody. Whether you are staying in or going out or ignoring it completely, whatever you choose to do, have a lovely one.
Yes.
And please stay with us into the new year. It's very lovely having you with us.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.